Hi, good evening. This is Jim Hoffman.
And this is Josh Knapp.
With a horn in the background?
No, that was...
Almost like perfect timing.
Yeah, well, you asked me to bring the sound effects.
Yeah, right. And now a metal pipe.
Right. Yeah. Metal pipe to the back of the head. Notice the soft thunking sound. Mm. The mushiness.
Well, Josh, before I guess we get started today.
Well, this is like a topic for you, Jim. You're really
wearing
a rug. Okay, before we start.
Before we start, I think I'd like to just say happy Memorial Day to everybody.
Well,
and just as a reminder to people, and this is something that, you know, I think people need to remember is that, you know, it's a day to remember soldiers and sacrifices that were made by our military, not a day necessarily for barbecuing. And I think people need to maybe always keep that in the back of their mind that, you know, they're out there barbecuing and that it was, you know, the holiday isn't about the barbecue. Even though I think
I thought it was for, actually, I thought it was a holiday for four-wheeling, Jim.
Yeah.
That's what I read on Facebook.
Yeah. Well, you know, the funny thing is that that's what happened. I mean, granted, listen, it's a day off for people, right? They're going to enjoy it, and that's fine. But I think that there should be at least some part of the day, I feel, where people should just take a moment and just remember, you know, the people and the soldiers and sailors and Marines that have made the ultimate sacrifice for us. So
our servicemen and women who are still out there in the fields today and were out there in the fields defending our freedom since this country was born.
Exactly. So
you picked a live one tonight.
A live
you really
one.
Did. I mean, we've talked about this twice today, and I've gotten four-letter words out of you both times. I'm wondering if I'm going to be able to elicit that response from you online here. Online
all,
and for all recorded history.
First of all, I don't know what you're talking about.
No, of course
okay.
not.
That's number one. I think you're making crap up.
That's what I stir the pot, man. That's what I do.
Well, that's why you probably got it out of me before. I think you're just stirring the pot and trying to play Mr. Innocent, you know.
Moi?
Yeah. Well, listen. Tonight's topic. I'll say this.
Go ahead.
All right. I brought this topic up, and granted that the segment of patients that we get that might fall into this category, it might not be that big when you think about it, and you think about the bigger picture, you know. I don't know if anyone is listening, if you've read the little blurb, you know, for this tonight's topic, I put down too often we get patients who don't need an ambulance, never mind the care that we can give them, and that some people call that being our job security or just part of our job. But my question is responding and transporting these types of patients, give them that green light to keep calling 911 for a high-priced taxi ride, and how I mentioned how people talk, and I say people, I mean patients, families of patients, and they talk about how we start IVs, give oxygen, do EKGs on patients who clearly wouldn't need it otherwise, and how we're kind of doing it to, you know, CYA, and that CYA either maybe with the hospital staff, maybe it's CYA with our QA, QI personnel, and I think that to me, for a lot of these patients, and a lot of the people are frequent flyers, a lot of them are abusers, let's say, of 911. I think that the message they get is, you know, hey, last time I called 911, I got all this great treatment, and I was whisked right into the emergency department. I didn't have to wait. I really snowed them. I really made them think I was having this, you know, severe abdominal pain, or I made them really think I was having this chest pain, or I couldn't breathe. And I got seen before all the other people that were waiting outside because I gamed the system. And my question is, you know, shouldn't we be treating these patients as needed rather than as a call type or feed them into some type of a protocol? So that's, I guess, where I'm coming from on that. And
Well, you approach this with, I gotta say, a certain level of emotional content when we first talked. I mean, you're really calmed down now, and if anybody's listening, you gotta hear
well,
Jim yell.
I took my Paxil
You
for.
did. Oh, okay, excellent. I was wondering because, either that or a couple of shots of scotch before you got on. I mean, either way, it's all good. Whatever floats your boat. But you just mixed three different areas. Where we were
Sure.
focused in is the what we consider that quote unquote bullshit chest pain that we talked about earlier. And
Right.
I was like, I bristled at that because I'm always about, listen, there's a certain amount of BS that we have to deal with in this job, and there's nonsense that we got to put up with, and if you don't click the right box, QAQI is gonna, call you in and ask you, why didn't you check off that right box? And there's a certain aspect that you gotta watch your back. I've always said that. It's unfortunate with this job that we can't be as free as we want to be. But, the reality is, and I was saying this before, the ER works on certain protocols. We work on certain protocols. The hospitals work on protocols. Protocols are a way of life because protocols, a lawyer can measure the standard of care. And do we need to deliver care how a lawyer says we should deliver care? The reality is
Oh
yeah,
boy.
we sort of gotta, it's unfortunate, but there's an aspect that we gotta do that. Now, when you take in the person who's lonely and wants their blood pressure checked and calls you every Thursday evening at the same time because they want your blood pressure checked, are we enabling the system by checking their blood pressure? That depends on what your system is. Sometimes, yeah. I'll agree with you there. But I think that if you get the 20-year-old who's complaining of substernal chest pain and you don't treat them as per your protocol, that's your own stupidity. Even if it's bullshit, even if you are 100% certain, you don't know to 100%, and now you're taking your ass and you're putting your ass own ass on the line, and it's your own fault.
Yeah, but when does the CYA come back to us as instead of relying on following a protocol to cover our asses? When do we start relying on our skills, on our assessments, on our judgment? You know what I mean? Doctors make
I
mistakes in
think when
hospitals all the time, and this is after they've done a million tests on patients. We have a
right.
limited window with the patient.
Yeah, and when you become afraid of doing your skills of assessing, when you're saying I'm not going to assess, it's the chest pain comes out on the 20-year-old who's been coughing for a week, spitting up green sputum, has rails on bilaterally, a fever. I think that you probably could get away with not giving them nitro and aspirin. But then what are you doing, Jim? You're diagnosing it and you're saying clinically, this isn't some
No.
sort of chest pain. This is chest pain from coughing from
It's
an
yeah, I'm gonna say
overexposure.
it's not a, I don't
Well,
feel the
admit it.
pain, it's cardiac in nature.
There
Based on
you
my assessment, patient's history, everything leading up to that event, their complaints, all that, the vital signs I take, everything that I do, when I'm done assessing the patient, I'm gonna say, okay, this patient is not having, in my opinion, a cardiac related event. I feel
Right.
it's more pleuritic type chest pain.
And
Now,
you
is
as a
that
paramedic have now made this a BLS call.
Yes.
All right.
But now here's the thing. I mean,
But
listen.
you just assessed. You're using your assessment skills. So
Correct.
where is that CYA?
What are you talking about?
How is it CYA if you're using
But
your
this is
assessment?
what I'm trying to say, that too often with patients, we won't we, people don't do that, okay? Because
But
the patient,
they're not assessing, then they're not doing their job.
yeah, but they're doing what you mentioned, which is following a protocol, A to Z, and not thinking about you know, how the patient's presenting and how their what their assessment is revealing to them.
Yeah, but what's our protocols are based on making a diagnosis. Even though I don't love that part because we're presumptive.
All right, diagnosis. You just got done saying it. Right? You're diagnosing. And I'm not saying that we should be diagnosing patients because there are a lot of things that we cannot ascertain in the field. We don't have, you know, x-ray machines. We can't do chest x-rays. We can't do blood work, you know, for 100% type of a cardiac diagnosis.
I know that.
But at the same time, I think if we get a patient like that and we decide, okay, in my opinion, in my experience, in my training, my evaluation, all that other great stuff that goes into that, you know, with a competent provider that is, you know, doing the right thing for the patient, you know, I think you're doing better not giving them nitroglycerin and all that stuff just to follow a protocol because they say they have chest pain.
Well, but that's...
And, you know, working them up just because, okay, this person says they have chest pain, they're getting aspirin, they're getting nitro, they're getting an IV, they're getting all this great stuff. I don't care what the assessment reveals. I don't care what the 12-lead tells me.
I'm safer up triaging it to the worst possible conclusion than I am doing a job diagnosing it and making a presumptive diagnosis and treating on that basis of a presumptive diagnosis.
Right, but here's my thing.
But that's the thing. That's the differentiation.
But this is the title of the show is that by doing
that, what?
You are treating the patient based on cover your ass and not based on your assessment. You're doing it on that basis, and then in turn, you're enabling this abuse of the system for that 20-year-old who's had a cold and a cough for a week, who can go to their doctor, but instead they call 911 and tie up an ambulance because, you know, they're sitting there thinking they're having you know, chest pain, or they feel that
they were diagnosed
right.
They're
diagnosed by their friends that say, "Oh my God, you're having chest pain. Call 911."
My uncle had chest pain, and he had a heart attack. So,
exactly.
You know, right. He was – how old was he? 80. You know, yeah.
At the same time, listen.
But hold on, because I'm going to agree with you here. Are we – what you're saying, are we doing CYA, and are we, in fact, by doing CYA, enabling – the trouble is what you're calling CYA, I'm calling not doing your job, being afraid to do your job and clinically diagnose what the hell is going on. You're basically – because, yeah, there's a – CYA, by its very definition, is saying if you up triage to a point where you provide such a level of care that you'll cover anything that could be going wrong with this patient, you can't go wrong, well, then you're not doing your job, are you?
Yeah, but my thing is, though, is – listen, this topic and the way that you can kind of take any call and kind of hit it from different angles. Now, listen, you know, this 20-year-old who's saying they're having chest pain. A lot of these people, they don't realize that it's not cardiac in nature, so they get scared and they call 911. Okay, but at what point do we, you know, have the same patient with the same complaint, you know, that you'll get 2-3 times a year with, you know, with a recurring cold or whatever the case may be, or stress or whatever it is, you know, calling 911 because they're having the same chest pain.
Right.
You know what I mean?
And now,
at what point now they're saying, okay, well, I'm not, you know, you get that one, the person that gets it, you know, of course, they're afraid. They don't know. Of course, you're going to do your assessment and you're going to try to explain to them what you feel your assessment is revealing to them, to let them know, no, listen, I don't really think this is your heart. I think it's because you've been sick or whatever, but we'll take you to the hospital and we'll have them evaluate you a little further. But at that point, you're not going to say, okay, well, you know, just because your first time ever calling 911 and, you know, you don't know any better, then I'm just going to go ahead and treat you based on the protocol. I mean, you talk about things that we've talked about on this show before, things like spinal mobilization, where that's a big CYA thing where we're mobilizing everybody that's involved in a car accident to, you know, CYA ourselves because of the possibility that, you know, they might have a neck injury or a back injury.
Yeah, well, again, you know, there's. I think one begets the other. I think that a failure to diagnose correctly the failure to do what you were trained to do, to say, okay, I'm going to look on this on the surface, it's chest pain. I'm going to look on this as mechanism of injury. You're going on a longboard is a failure to say, hey, are you having any neck back pain? Do you have any distracting injuries? Are you A&O times three? You know, is everybody else in the car okay? Well, then guess what? You don't need a longboard. All right.
But a lot of people will do it. They do it because they want to cover their ass factor. Even if they ask the patient that,
but you're covered because
it's easier. It's easier to put them on a board and make them uncomfortable and maybe even worsen an issue that might be going on. You know, there's studies that show that might even be making a back injury or neck injury worse.
Right.
But they'll do it because it's in a protocol and it's supposedly this standard of care. And we end up doing it, and you know our assessment goes out the window.
They're sitting there and they're saying, you can cover your ass one of two ways. You can write up in your patient assessment the logic of why you chose to go this treatment route, which did not include a longboard, or you can say, fuck it. Did I say that? I didn't say it on there. You'll edit that out later.
What if it's a serious assessment?
So you can say, forget it. I'm going to go and just strap them on a longboard and say, patient put on longboard, spinal immobilization, transport it to the hospital, let the doctors figure it out. And what have you done? You've taken up a hospital bed. You've taken up a bay or whatever. This person's going to forget what you're doing to the person. I mean, yes, I mean, that's significant as well. But look at the additional stress you're putting on the system. As well as possibly injuring yourself by lifting, who knows? I mean, I've seen people RMA more fat people than they will transport them. Come on, bullshit. You've seen it too.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, oh, you know what? They're going to be a bitch to lift. So you can take the RMA.
Yeah. Well, they get the skinny person out of the car first, and then when the other unit shows up, oh, that one's yours.
It's the best. Yes.
The problem
is not laziness.
The thing is too is that I'm not advocating to not transport people. I'm not advocating to not assess people.
And I don't.
This is whether they're a frequent flyer or not, because I mentioned to you this earlier today. We were trying to test out that new platform.
That worked.
That was a bust, FYI. But you know, the frequent flyers, even you have to still assess them, even if they are the same complaint every time. You still have to give them an assessment because it could be that one time with that whole cry wolf type thing where they do say something. I mean, listen, I have a few patients where I am where these are a couple of elderly people who've got a significant history, but they're calling for random complaints, and they'll throw in a chest pain as part of the, my knee hurts, my foot, my back. Oh, yeah, I'm having chest pain too.
And they were told, haven't you had the calls where the person said, if I'm having chest pain, difficulty breathing, I get to the hospital faster?
Right, but this is my thing.
Okay.
Now, are we enabling them by
and the one
by treating them for that?
Okay.
I'm not saying not assess them. I'm not saying not transport them. What I'm saying is treating them for these things.
So getting a word in edgewise here, all right, going back to the longboard, I don't think that putting somebody on a longboard, I don't think we're enabling. I think that we're teaching a valuable social lesson of if you want to call in a bullshit complaint about neck and back pain, then you're going to suffer for it because longboards, as we all know, are not fun to be on for an extended period of time.
But you might also get people, though, too, I think, that know that they've seen it before. They've heard it from their friends that this is what happens when you get into a car accident. The ambulance comes, they put you on a board,
right,
or they put a collar. And if you don't do that, that could be somebody who might say, hey, wait a second, I didn't get that done to me.
I can see.
And now I can go. That's going to be the first thing I say to the lawyer when I get a hold of a lawyer is say, hey, listen, I was in this accident. You know, But the ambulance didn't put me on that hard board that I've heard other people tell me about.
And the really smart ones, the ones who've been through it before, want to be on that hard board because
right.
that's what their lawyers want.
Right, exactly.
When the lawyers are actually disappointed they weren't on the long board because they can't show a treatment that shows an injury.
Sure. I mean, listen, how many times I've had people who were in previous accidents who
all-state-itis, man.
You get there, and they want that board because either maybe they didn't have it last time, and their lawyer might have told them, well, you know, they didn't immobilize you on the scene, so that would have been better if they did that. We would have had a better case.
Those animals.
And now, the second time now, maybe it's 5, 10 years later, they get into another little fender bender, and now this time they want that happening, you know. And then, again, we end up doing it based on protocol, based on this perceived standard of care, and not on our assessment and not on, you know, how the patient presented. Now, granted, they say they have neck and back pain, whether it's a minor fender bender or the whole front end is crushed. You're going to put them on a board and collar because you're basing on their complaint.
But let's go back to and I'm going to maintain that board and collar is if the person knows to answer it, you know, to ask for it, and they insist on getting it, and they say, listen, this is what I've got, and you go, okay, they're willing to go. That's not enabling because they're going through that regardless of what you do, okay? What's
right,
enabling?
They want it because they feel this is what's going to better their trip and their time in the hospital is going to be faster because they're
right.
on that. They're going to be taken more seriously. So to a point, you're still enabling them, but...
But if you do a good job at describing what happened and you do a mechanism of injury and, this is a little bit on that gray area because everybody goes, oh, no, you can't take pictures. It's HIPAA and everything else. But I take pictures of the car. I don't take pictures of a patient. I take pictures of the car. So the doc can see... the triage nurse can see the mechanism of injury, okay? And when you have a car and they go, what's wrong with it? You go, exactly.
Yeah, well, listen,
you know,
I mean, I'm going to say right now, that picture thing, I've actually been to some trauma CMEs where I've had trauma docs say, listen, if you can, you know, take a quick picture and show us
right.
and get to the hospital.
But that works two ways, is what I'm saying. So you get the person with all-state-itis, and that's what we're talking about enabling here. We're not talking about the true trauma or the true real, you know, the neck and back pain that has every reason to be legitimate, but the one where the guy was on his cell phone cursing and he sees you pull up and he jumps into the front seat of the car and he goes, oh, my neck's killing me. You know, we've been there. Hey, listen, why don't you come to the ambulance? Oh, I can't move. I
right.
just saw you walking around. No,
my
you
legs
didn't.
Are numb. I'm out of
yeah.
my feet.
I just saw you walking to the back of the car and yelling. No, you didn't. All right. You know, and so what you do is you bring them in. You say, okay. You put them on the backboard. You tie them down. Get them secure. And, you know, maybe have a glass of water before they go down just so their bladder's, you know, sure to be full. And I didn't just say that, by the way. That was somebody else. And you bring them in, and then you describe the mechanism of injury to the triage nurse. And
yeah.
9 times out of 10, if you're good with if the triage nurse is good with you, and you're good with them, and they usually are, we usually work well together. Guess what? They're going to say, "Okay, you just roll them over there. Wait for them. I'll get them seen."
And I, Josh, no, but then
you, later you come in. Go ahead.
But do you see, like, this is part of
But that's like, working together, not to enable.
But this is part of my argument, and, you know, you talk about how hospitals have protocols and things like that. The same thing goes, I think, if you bring a patient into a hospital that's complaining of, chest pain or whatever, and you give a report to the doc and the nurse that paints the picture of this person is not having a cardiac event, in your opinion.
I have found that
you know,
less persuasive. Because there are, I think, there are more rigorous rules, and there's a different sort of chart of rule out for the ED. Keep in mind, they got the chemistry lab. So, you know, there's an aspect of, you know, you got to bring that person in with either chest pain or not chest pain, and their problem. I've seen people brought in without that had never had chest pain as a complaint at all, and they're off, and because of a certain age group and a certain likelihood,
they work them up, right? They give them a cardiac workup, right? Because there might be one element of their complaint that maybe is might be an underlying cardiac condition.
So I don't feel that's enabling. What I feel is enabling, like, and what you were going to say, and I think the frequent flyers are the ones we really need to focus on, because those are the ones, hey, you know, that they say, oh, yeah, that's job security, but it doesn't have to be job security where you tie up resources. I hate that, too.
I hate that. I hate that whole thought process of, you know, oh, I don't care if we get all these bullshit, the cut fingers or whatever it is, because it's job security. You know,
it's really not.
You know, to me, that is it's abusing, it's abuse, it's tying up resources that, you know, might need to be used, you know, someplace else during the time that you're with that person, and you know, to me, a lot of calls like that is something I think that EMS needs to move.
It's also a wrong way of thinking. What job security is a recognition by the community that they want an EMS response, an emergency medical response in a certain period of time.
Right.
That's what job security is. Job security is not the more transports you do.
Yeah, the better.
It has nothing
to
do with that.
Well, because it goes back to the money issue. It goes back to, well, you know, the more transports we do, the more we get paid. You know,
but that's not.
That's not really true. But that's the mentality that people start to get of, well, the more transports we do, the more patients we see, the more we're going to get paid. Rather than, like you're saying, you know, it should be more about response time. It should be more about the quality of equipment and care that we can give to patients that actually need us. To me, that's a bigger job security. You know.
That's the only job security.
Yeah.
Because in the end, nobody's going to care about how many cut fingers we transport.
Right.
Stomach aches.
Well, because you think about it, if they ever pulled stats on something like that, and they start looking at, oh my God, you did you had 100 calls last month, and you know 10 of them were seemed to be critical in nature, and the other 90 were cut fingers and fevers.
Let these people take a taxi.
Right. People go, what the hell is going on here? You know?
Yeah.
But that's because,
that goes
to a whole nother topic of communities and educating the community for what we actually do and what we can do, based, you know, rather than the perception of what we're doing.
So let me give you the call and let me give you the idea of what enabling is and what is not in my eyes. With this same call. So you got a frequent flyer, and I'll base it off a guy I used to get. He'd call like every Saturday night, and he'd be almost so intoxicated he could barely stand up. He'd be leaning on a payphone, and the call type was chest pain. And I'd get there, and it was, Fred, what's going on? And he's got, I got chest pain. I said, you know, we were through this last week. When do you get chest pain? When I drink. And what were you doing last night? Oh, tonight. I was drinking. Were you drinking a lot? Yeah, I drank a lot. I said, is that why you have the chest pain? Yeah. And then you'd go through the whole, if you do your assessment, hey, do you have pain anywhere else in your neck, shoulder, arm, or anything like that? No. Where is the pain? She'll point to it with a finger. He points over one lobe of his lung on his right side. I go, okay, is it a sharp or dull pain? Sharp pain. Does it hurt when you take a deep breath? Yes. You know, and you go through all of these process of elimination. You can even do a 12 lead if doing a 12 lead in that case is CYA. Because now I see no changes on the 12 lead. The pain is pleuritic in nature. It has a repeatable cause. It's you know the same thing each and every time. Now you got probably an intox, okay? And so what else is hurting you? Oh, my back hurts me. My legs hurt me. My ankles are swollen. Now you're starting to get the whole clinical picture. Now if we bring this guy in. You know, he knows that he wants to go to the hospital because he wants a place to sleep and a hot meal, all right? And so are we enabling the system at that point? I don't really think so, because you got to bring them in anyway.
Well, exactly. Right, exactly. But think about how the emergency room sees that same person too, the same amount of time you're seeing them, right? So what if now you decide, okay, you know what? I am going to I'm going to give you an example too with this, where okay, I'm going to work this guy up now. You know, I'm doing everything. I'm going to give him nitro. I don't care what goes on. I'm going to give him nitro, give him a big headache. I'm going to stick him with a big needle. I'm going to work him up and take him to the hospital as a cardiac workup. And then you get there, and the hospital looks at you like, what the hell are you doing? This guy's here every other day. If you're not bringing him, another ambulance is bringing him.
Yeah.
And now you work them up, and now they have to, of course, now they have to follow through. They can't say to you like they might normally say, oh, put him in the hallway, or let him sit out in triage, or whatever. Now they're going to have to take a bed up. Now they're going to have to follow through with what you've started on this patient.
Yeah, I've seen hospitals where they've taken the new medics and who do those workups, and they go, oh, that's nice. Okay, put them in the, you know. I've seen nurses remove the IV and put them in the waiting room.
Well, I've actually had instances, too, where I've heard of medics that will take a patient like that and work them up, which is wrong. This is wrong.
Oh, to dump them in the hospital and make more work for them?
Well, no, they do what they have to do to the patient in order to make the patient discomfort. You know, they'll stick a 14-gauge, you know, needle in them.
In their hand.
They'll shave off all their hair to do the 12 lead. You know, as much discomfort as they possibly can, you know, based on this patient's pain, you know, complaint, knowing that it's not legitimate, knowing that, like you mentioned, knowing that more than likely this is just going to be an intox type.
Well, that's no longer covering your ass. That's improper treatment.
Right, but the thing is, though, you are treating the patient based upon their, you know, their complaint, you know. Mm-hmm. But I've heard of stories of medics that have done that, thinking they're in the right, saying, okay, you know what, you're going to dispatch me to this call that even the dispatcher knows that it's a chronic corner with a chronic patient, and the dispatcher is going to have the goal to dispatch it as chest pain and act like it's serious and send a BLS crew or an ALS crew and an engine and all this crap for the same guy that calls all the time. And now I'm going to get there. You know what? I'm going to go ahead today. That's it. I've had it. I'm going to work this guy up, you know, at the chest pain, even though I know everybody else on the scene knows that this is just a pretty much an intox. It's calling, like you said, a warm bed and a meal. You know, normally I would just take him in, but this time I'm going to treat him that way. Then you get to the hospital thinking you're doing what everybody wants you to do because you're just following a protocol, you're following a call type, and now the hospital tries to jam you up because they feel that you've gone and abused this patient.
Yeah, no,
I've seen that happen to medics.
Yeah, are you getting what you deserve because now the hospital's turning the tables and trying to jam you up?
Well, yeah, I mean, in a way, you are getting what you deserve because you've lost control of yourself and you're not being a professional at that point. You're not assessing the patient based upon how they're presenting versus what their complaint is. Because like you mentioned earlier, a lot of people, you know, people in that situation, a lot of times when they pick up that phone to call 911, they say, you know, or they wave somebody down, has a cell phone, they say, I'm having chest pain or I can't breathe, because they know they'll get a much more rapid response and, you know, more people responding and a big show, you know, and get that transport, you know, as opposed to when they call up and say, hey, you know, I want detox, you know. They know when they say that, somebody, no one's going to be showing up all enthused. You're going to get a BLS crew showing up who's not going to be happy they got to take this guy. But if they say, oh, I'm having chest pain, they're going to get a, you know, they're going to ALS crew, probably an engine, you know, first responder, and maybe BLS, depending upon, you know, the system you're in
Well, the question, how do you get out of that? I don't even think there's a way to get out of that, to be honest with you. I mean, because, you know, that's based on dispatch.
Well, this is probably the problem, though, is that you're, you know, because I think about how even something like that, where you're, this is another form of CYA even, where you're dispatching all these resources to a corner, to a place and a person who has a repeated call for 911, and now you're dispatching all these resources, and now isn't that enabling that person at the same time? You know, now you're enabling that person, you know, to have that complaint, to call 911 and make that same, you know, complaint over and over again and get the same, you know, response from all these different entities. You know, so now isn't that enabling?
Well, you're not going to like what I have to say.
I usually don't, but go ahead.
Yes, it's enabling, but what are you going to do about it?
Well, I mean, listen, and I've said this a lot.
I mean,
show is not a lot. This show is not going to, you know, this.
Why not?
Office hours doesn't
why not?
Give you
why not?
A solution.
I want the solutions. This is EMS Solutions, isn't
yeah.
it? No, it's EMS Office Hours.
Back in the day, it was EMS Solutions, and then somebody told me I couldn't use that anymore because they
were just a baby. And what did they do with EMS Solutions? They did nothing with it. I told you. You should have just used the name and told them to go screw themselves.
But to be nice.
You were trying to be nice.
Listen, I don't know what the answer is.
I want the listeners out there to know there was a day when Jim was nice. And even today, he's able to pull the wool over people's eyes and get Paramedic of the Year.
Yeah.
Yes, that's our Jim Hoffman was Paramedic of the Year this year. Okay, because he somehow convinced people that he was nice. I am here to tell you that's bullshit.
I am nice.
Ah, right. Yes.
Listen to me. This is my thing. Here's my thing. Every patient we get sent to, and this even goes for patients who call for, let's say, a cut finger, right? They still deserve our.
Right?
They still deserve our full assessment. They still deserve our full attention. You know, one call at a time type thing, right? One call at a time, every call is success, right? So, you know, they still deserve that attention from
I
you.
I can't believe you just said that. I am absolutely freaking done.
They still deserve that attention. They still deserve your full assessment. But the question is, do they deserve this, you know, whole hubbub transport? You know,
wait.
When are we going to be able to start telling people like that that they don't need an ambulance?
When I was saying this earlier, you were saying, screw them, they don't deserve nothing. Now you're going to back off that?
No, I think that I feel people should get a full assessment, you know, and we should still base our
anal
treatment.
Probe.
What's that?
Complete with the anal probe?
No, I don't carry one of those anymore. I got in trouble. I haven't had an ambulance.
It turns out to be not in protocol.
Yeah, it wasn't. What protocol is under? I said, what? What are you talking about? That's not mine.
They got smart about that.
No, but you know what? Listen, seriously.
Yes.
Everybody deserves the assessment, right? Everyone deserves to be fully assessed. But I think when you get to the part of, you know, just transporting people and doing all these things just because of their complaint or because you just don't want to have to document it more appropriately for something you didn't do based on their complaint, you know, is what we start having an issue with. That's where I think my issue is.
I think, you know, if we're going to dig down into your issue is, and it's a repeated issue because you've had it before, of people being too lazy and not doing their job. Because if you're going to give that listen, I am 100% with you, and I made light of it, made fun of it, but it's true. Every patient deserves, you know, our attention because they called and they whatever the reason is, if they're called with an eye to abusing the system, well, then we need to be able to ferret that out and understand that. If they called for a legitimate reason or because they're scared because they don't understand what's going on,
right.
Well, then they don't know any better, but we're there to figure it out, right? Because on a basis of what we do, we get into the field, we assess, we diagnose, and we treat. And I actually had an instructor a long time ago. It's really simple what we do. We diagnose and we treat. You know, it's two things. It's not asking a whole hell of a lot to take a look, figure it out, and then to do something based on what you think this is.
Right.
And if you just go in with your eyes closed and just say, okay, whatever it is, and you mail it in, or phone it in, as they say, then you get what you deserve.
Well, I think what happens though too, you get people, providers out there who are on two different ends of a spectrum too. You'll have people who will say, okay, you know what, everything's bullshit. I'm not taking this seriously. Let's just get to the hospital. And then you get the ones who say, I don't care what it is. I'm working up. Every patient's going to get worked up. You know, I'm not going to really go into a whole bunch of detail. I'll get the basics on it, and then I'll work them up and let the hospital figure it out when I get there. Instead of treating every patient as a full patient and doing a full evaluation, you know, primary, secondary, vital signs, repeat vital signs to get a trend, all of that,
Right.
And I think that what we need to be doing is more of that. We need to be focusing and encouraging our coworkers and our peers and new people to come into the field that they need to focus more on their assessments and basing their treatments and what protocol they might be working under on that assessment. And if the assessment reveals that it's a pleuritic chest pain or the assessment reveals that it's just a monitor and transport, then that's what they should do. They shouldn't be, well, okay, my assessment says this, but they're saying they have, chest pain, or they're saying, I keep using chest pain as the example because that seems to be the easiest, one.
Right.
But, the patient has that. So, I know that, in my opinion, in my assessment, I don't think they're having chest pain, but just to make it easier on myself.
And it's probably the most frequent one that's, overly triaged.
Right.
Oh, if I have triaged chest pain, yeah. I'm okay.
Right, exactly. Because, listen, for the most part, you get people, you can give them nitro, and not a whole hell of a lot's going to happen to them if you give them nitro if they're not really having chest pain, right?
Right.
It's, what are you going to get? You're going to give them a headache, maybe drop the blood pressure a little bit,
And some people may look as the headache as a good thing, goes hand in hand with shaving the hair and using a large bore IV.
Right.
But I'll put it to you this way. I think those same people that are ready and willing to up triage are the same people that are reluctant to RMA.
Yeah, I agree.
I mean, I know you RMA. I know you like you and you. It's like is the wrong word. You use it as a tool, to clear yourself off the job and move on, and say, yep, you called an ambulance, but this isn't important enough for an ambulance. You have the patient agrees with you, everything's copacetic, sign here, thank you very much. If you have a problem, I'll be back, just call 911.
Right.
And, and go on their day. But
I mean,
what do you do? How do you document an RMA, Jim?
What do you mean?
How do you document an RMA?
I document everything else, like a regular transport. But at the end, instead of transferring it to to a nurse or a doctor, I document that the patient refused.
Hold on. If you know you're bringing a patient to the hospital and you're on the tail end of your night, maybe didn't have a good night's sleep, you've done too many jobs already that tour, and you're bringing this patient to the hospital. Would you say if that same job was an RMA, you would be documenting more carefully or the same as the one that's going to the hospital? Because I'll argue that you'd be documenting more carefully.
Well, I think the RMAs do get documented. Well, they should be documented a little more carefully with things. I think you should maybe be focused a little bit more on what was explained to the patient as well. You don't have to necessarily document that on a transport.
Right.
You want to document that the patient, understood the risks of staying and things like that. I mean, honestly, a lot of times when it comes to CYA, when you talk about RMAs, whenever somebody's to me, whenever somebody's on the fence and they're not sure if they want to go or they're not sure if they want to RMA, then I encourage them to go because you're on the fence and you were that scared to call 911, then you should be getting transported to the hospital.
Right. Right. And I think that's something that we've always been a proponent here on the show is that, there's certain CYA that is proper and good and you should be doing
right.
Because it's part of your job. Now, what I think, and going back to the beginning why I was giving you such a frickin' hard time on this CYA or enabling is because I don't think that we're CYAing I don't think we're covering our ass any more or less. I think we're not being good practitioners, and we're not diagnosing what's going on, and we're being lazy. And that's a difference from covering your ass.
Well, yeah, so, I mean, I guess that could be a better. Yeah, I mean, that could be a better. I guess a better title, maybe even for the episode, because, it's CYAing based upon being lazy. You're CYAing what you're doing based on being lazy, which I think in turn ends up enabling certain people that call 911, you know, on a regular basis.
I think that's 100%.
And again, it's not the people, you know, some people that call 911 that don't know any better because they're scared or they've never had experience with 911 before. They don't know what to expect. They don't know what's gonna happen. But you get there and you realize that, you know, it's not. It's an anxiety attack or whatever the case may be. But you're going to go and as a professional and as a good clinician, you're going to go ahead and you're going to do a full assessment on those patients, you know, because but when you talk about, you know, CYA, like you said, doing it because you're lazy and you're just doing it based upon a call type, whether the person is the first time you've ever encountered them or you've seen them, you know, you see them 2-3 times a week, you know, that's when I think we start running into a problem. And I think that's what ends up hurting, I think, the profession, because then, you know, what message are we sending to the other health professions if we're not going to, you know, take responsibility for what we're finding when we assess our patients and treating them appropriately?
Mm-hmm. No, 100%. You know, and that whole gambit of, you know, taking somebody. Yeah, and you give the example of they never called an ambulance before. And, you know, you get that, too. You show up on scene and they say, I've never called an ambulance before. Yeah. And they're almost apologetic. And it's like those are the easy jobs. You know, those are the ones that's like, listen, I know why you called me, and I'm here to help you. Okay, you called for help. I'm here to help you. All right? You know, where you get the other ones. And, you know, it's funny because on the blog page, I was reading you some of the comments before, and the guy was complaining that he was being used as a taxi. Now, you know, that's an enabling move, you know, bringing somebody where they need to go, you know, or because they want to go shopping around the hospital or something like that.
Right.
But
yeah,
you can't
course.
Get out of that.
I know. There's nothing you can do about that, unfortunately. But my thing is with patients like that, you know, if that's what it is, then that's the way we should be treating it. We shouldn't be working them up, you know, to give them this message of, oh, you fooled me, I'm going to go ahead and work you up now and whatever. I mean, whether in the patient's mind or that person's mind, they're like, listen, when I get there, I'm walking out when I get there. I don't care what the hell you do. As soon as you leave, I'm going to walk out the back door and go to my friend's house, or I'm going to go meet my girlfriend or whatever the case may be. And I've had patients that wanted to get to certain places because it was closer to the beverage store.
Right.
You know what I mean? So that's when it becomes that taxi ride.
Are you tempted to drop a line on them?
What's that?
Are you tempted to drop a line on them?
No. No. But I know people that are, because they feel like...
See, I would be. If I knew out and out that this guy was going to do this, he did it to me 3 times before, you know what? Fool me 3 times, shame on me. And the next time out, they say, hey, listen, you know, you really got to be seen in the ED. Oh, no, I'm leaving. And I said, yeah, but, you know, you could get infection, you could die. And I said, well, why did you do that? They said, well, you were telling me that you were dizzy and nauseous and things like that. So I started an IV on you, you know? It's like, but most of the time, you know, it's been my experience that these patients are wise to that anyway, and they're not going to let you do anything, you know?
Yeah. I mean, listen, how many times you get the overdose that's been to the emergency department a bunch of times, and you work them up, and they're pulling the IV out of their arm and walking out.
Right.
You know? So, I mean, listen, you know, patients, just to reiterate what we've been saying, you know, everybody deserves a full assessment and deserves our full attention. I just think that there's a line there that is just kind of sending a message to not just the people that are abusing the system, but also to other healthcare providers that we are, like that guy said on your Facebook page, you end up being this taxi cab, you know. And, you know, this is the type of thing that I think needs to get focused on. We can't stop it right now. There's nothing we can do about it. We have to kind of, you know, deal with that. You know, we're kind of helpless when it comes to that. there's not a lot we can do to stop that type of abuse. And that's blatant abuse. I mean, every system, every neighborhood pretty much has that. Wherever you go, you've got the people that call and abuse the system, so.
No, I mean there are things that you can look, and we're not a proponent of lying. We're not a proponent of getting yourself in trouble. But if it's within your capacity to do that, and you know that this person is abusing you as a taxi ride to a certain place, then don't bring them to that place. Hey, listen, they're on redirection. I can't bring you there. They're whatever,
Yeah, well, I've had that issue too, where I've had patients that want to go to one hospital because that's where their relatives are, things like that. And then when you sort of catch on to that and you say, hey, we can't go there, we got to take you someplace else, sometimes that can break the chain a little bit and can kind of make them a little more leery when they're using you for that reason. Doesn't always work because then people get to know their rights too. They can go where they insist on going, no matter how much you tell them they can't go. To a certain place, they know that they can insist on it, and
Yeah, but
they can
then
go
you
where
know
they
what?
want to go.
You have resources available to you at that point. You can call med control, and you can call med control. Listen, they're not there just to give you orders for narcotics. They're not there just to give you orders for that
Yeah,
extra order of.
they're there to guide you, they're there for advice and to.
So what's the, you know what? You've been abused by this person for 3 times in a row or 4 times, or you know them for years, and it's a particularly heavy call volume or something else, and they want to go to an out of area hospital or something like that. You know what? That's within your scope there to give med control a call and say, hey, this person wants transport to an out of area hospital. What can we
Yeah.
do about this? Can you give me orders to go to the closest or to divert to, wherever? And you
Right.
may not get the answer you like, but sometimes they recognize abuse of the system and they help you out.
Yeah.
And then your ass is, and then back to CYA, your ass is covered.
It's funny that, listen, this topic, I mean, this is a common topic that you've heard, in the front of ambulances and garages and, ED crew rooms and even amongst nurses and doctors where you get, these types of things and where it's talked about. Oh, I mean, you can even watch some of these trauma life in the ER shows where the docs don't think it's a thing, but they, like you mentioned earlier, they're going to do the CAT scan, they're going to do everything because it's part of the assessment, it's part of the diagnostic tools that they use, just like we use diagnostic tools like glucometers and SpO2 and things like that and EKGs and all. So, to me, I think we need to, again, I don't want to go running around. I think we pretty much hit all everything we can tonight on this,
All right.
this topic. I don't
Yep.
know, but I think we've made good points in that. Everyone deserves to have, the full assessment, but when do they deserve and when is it, not deserve, but when should we be working them up fully just based upon a complaint versus basing our treatment and our transportation and things like that based upon our full assessment? And that includes all the diagnostic tools that we have available to us, and stop short of just making it what it might be. It might just be that high price taxi ride, and it might be that, you know what?
Or free taxi ride, as the
Right.
case
Or
may be.
yeah, or it might just be that this 20-year-old this time that called us for chest pain really is having chest pain, and we do need to work them up and transport them,
Well, what did you do last night? 3 ounces of cocaine? Oh, well,
Right.
okay, let's
That's
take a look.
But this is part of the assessment, and this is part of, like I mentioned earlier too, when
Have
you've got
15 Red Bulls.
providers,
Is that a problem?
right? And this is like I mentioned earlier too. You have providers who will get that 20-year-old right away. It's not a real chest pain call. It's 20 years old, but not a real chest pain.
I'm trying to remember. I saw a really
But
great.
then not assessing the patient, not asking the question like you said, like somebody, have you done any types of drugs or whatever? You know what I mean?
right on the back of that, Jim, was a statement I saw, and I'm not going to get it 100% right. I'm sorry. But it was something about one of the docs was saying, I'm not scared of the person who hasn't seen something before. I'm scared of the person with experience who's seen it 1,000 times. You know, and that was like, oh, yeah. You know, because immediately you see it, you're going to dismiss it. It's not important. And, you know, that's the one that's going to nab you in the butt.
Yeah, that's something I think that we have to keep in mind. We can't dismiss, you know, all patients. And that's why I mentioned earlier, too, as far as patients that are frequent flyers, you know, the intox and things like that. You know, yeah, there might be an intox, and you might be used to just kind of slapping them on the stretcher and taking them to the closest hospital. But, you know, they have to be assessed, too. I mean, I've had intoxes that have been regulars who, that one time, they were intox, but there was something else going on, you know. And, but, you know, knowing myself and, you know, knowing that I assessed them, I was able to catch it, not have to have the ER catch it hours later after I dropped them off. And then I look foolish, and then the ER looks foolish. And then, of course, they try to start trying to, you know, look for a scapegoat on, you know, who made them look bad, you know, who missed those signs and symptoms on that patient. You know?
Well, I guess the moral of that story is don't be a scapegoat. You know, don't go to your own funeral as somebody named Schmo or whatever.
Yeah. The thing tonight too, we talk about CYA, and I think if anyone listens to the entire episode, okay, I think they'll kind of see that CYA is really a fine line that we're walking in this job. You know, we have to do it to a point. And things like RMAs and spinal mobilizations and stuff like that. But we have to also base that on our training and experience or everything combined of what we're trying to do out there in the field, not just, you know, break open a protocol book, follow it, you know, step by step, and then not have to worry about, you know, anything else. You know what I mean? So, well, that's my little spiel on it, I guess. Like I said, I don't want to keep going and you know, trying to make my case. I mean, you're going to get people who say, oh, no, everybody gets everything. It doesn't matter. And you'll get people who say, you know, oh, that's bullshit. I'm not going to entertain that with the 20-year-old chest pain. It's not going to happen.
Yeah, and I think those are the people that aren't doing their jobs either. And
right.
We're all about doing – and what you just said before, it's all about doing your job. It's all about, you know, the basic respect. If you respect yourself, respect the patients for calling. You know, give them their due. Figure out what it is. If they're frequent
and
flyers,
go from there.
Then
go
from
go
there.
From there, exactly.
All right.
You get there, you know, you respond appropriately. You get there, you do what you have to do. You do your job, you know, and then you can then act appropriately. You know, not just do something.
Do your job.
Yeah, not just do something or not do something because of, you know, of a call type. That's my main thing. So listen, Josh, I guess we'll end it there. We only got about maybe 2 minutes, so
all right.
We didn't get too many calls tonight. I guess it is Memorial weekend.
Everybody's at their frickin' barbecue having a beer.
It's funny because, you know what, I didn't realize, I totally forgot when I scheduled this episode that it was falling on Memorial Day weekend. And I said, you know what, well, Memorial Day is Monday, but then I said, you know what, the weekend everyone's probably going to be out.
You know why that is.
Stuff, so,
I know why that is. You know why that is?
Why?
Because you and I don't have lives. This is all we do.
I don't know about that. I have a little bit of a life.
Do you really? Well, you know, why are you here?
Because I am dedicated to the craft.
Oh, okay. All right. Whatever you got to say. Yeah, you know, you can back that up with that. Sure.
It's true.
Go ahead.
Listen, I'm paramedic of the year, okay? I have a plaque and certificates to prove it. So.
Yeah, and that and 250 will get you a ride on any New York City subway.
Listen, I love it. I am loving it. So. All right, listen, guys, I see a few people in the chat room. I appreciate you sticking with us and listening to the show. Of course, you know, in the future, guys, feel free to come on back, call in, chat in the chat room, invite your friends, because we want as many people as possible taking advantage of the show. It's open forum. It's not just about me and Josh talking about it. You guys can more than be happy to chat away and give us a call with your stories, too, in the future. So next Sunday, same place, you know, come on back, and we'll have another topic here next Sunday at 7 p.m. So, Josh, thanks again. I guess I will see you next week.
Yep, next week. The week after, I won't be here. I'm doing a triathlon sprint, so
Oh, cool.
I'm psyched about that, but I'm not going to be around for the show the week after.
All right. All right. All right, well, guys.
So get some special guests then.
Yeah, I shall try. All right, everyone, that's it for tonight. This is Jim Hoffman, of course, the Missed Office Hours, and as always, guys, stay safe.